Aisha, and I'm a former host of Mocha Single Mothers by Choice, or SMCs. Like you, as an SMC, I decided to become a mother knowing I'd be the sole care provider and parent for my children, at least at the outset. The Mocha stood for Black, so I'm using the word Black, and I'll be discussing being a single mother by choice from a Black woman's lens. You'll connect with all the interesting and fun things about this non-traditional path, like discussing which sperm to use and some hard truths about fertility and the realities of dating as a single mother who doesn't have a co-parent to rely on occasionally, and what it's actually like to parent as an S&C. This is the Black Single Mothers by Choice podcast. People across an entire economic spectrum have been having babies for centuries. So, and how much money do you need to have a baby? None. It depends, right? And so for me, now, current day, I know SMCs who are in the $35,000 salary range for having kids. And I know SMCs who are in the mid six-figure range now on the side of parenting. And I can tell you what they all collectively say is that there's just never enough money to have kids. So if you're waiting for that moving target, because it will keep moving, to say this is the right time, it's never going to really come in a crystal form. So you just have to move forward. For me, more so advise SMCs to have a plan. I think you need to have a job. If you're an SMC where you can plan, I think you also have a plan for how to get that money, right? So if you have a plan, then you could also put a little bit away for savings. So I think you should have a job and at least have a small savings, and but mainly have a plan for how this is all going to work. At your expenses with a critical lens. Be honest with yourself about the things that are on your expenses now, pre-baby, that could potentially come off that list. Because every bill that you have, anticipate having those same bills when the baby is here, plus childcare, plus diapers, plus clothing, plus extra food, right? That's thought number one. Thought number two is that it's not just going to be coffee that you need to remove from that list, right? It's all of these things. You want to think in terms of $500. Can I take $500 worth of expenses off of that list and save that $500? So it's the coffee. It's the fall boots and the winter boots. Do you need both, right? It's the wardrobe. It's the vacation. So if you know you're trying to conceive, do you do five big vacations that year or do you just do three? So you're thinking in terms of chunks of money that you can save. So it's not just the coffee. It's not just the nails. It is chunks of money, childcare. So I will say, rule of thumb, what you will hear in a lot of SMC spaces is that if you are trying to conceive, and this is a standard question that we get, how are you paying for childcare? And the typical response is call around and find out how much childcare is in your area, general range, because right now you're trying to conceive. It doesn't have to be a definite number, but just a general idea. And then start saving what you find to be the average per month. And so that serves two purposes. One, it gives your wallet a chance to feel what it's like to pay childcare, but then also all of that savings in an interest-bearing account eventually starts to add up so that then when your baby does make an appearance, you probably have a nicer cushion than you would have had. Now, most people are not in positions to do that. So whatever you can put away is going to be a good thing. And I was in the ballpark of whatever I could put away is going to be a good thing. So I did do that. Now, daycare decreases as your child gets older. So having one child, let's say daycare is $1,500 a month. That drop between infant care and then going into toddler care could be $150 a month. So yeah, just to have a perspective, I only say that because I've been in spaces where SMCs are like, yeah. So people were like, once your kid goes to school, like the daycare rate drops, that daycare, when your child enters school, like daycare prices drop. And the reality is that it might drop by a third because once they're not in daycare, you have school age care, then you have summer camp, which you could budget for across the 12 month period. And so
summer
it's
camps
about
are expensive too.
Right. Like, right. Rolled. But ballpark, it gets to be about a third. It dropped by about a third. So I just want to make sure that we're keeping in perspective and giving like real ballpark numbers so that people don't go into it thinking, I was expecting not to pay anything for childcare once my kid entered school. And it's just, okay,
well,
you're still going to be
think,
paying. for daycares. And then you have the drop in diapers. Once they come out of diapers and they're potty trained, do an Amazon search. Diapers might be about $29.99 for a month's supply, and that drops. So that's about a $30 difference. So all told, as your child progresses, incrementally it gets cheaper, and then it hits a plateau. And I will say this, I know when I started trying to conceive, I didn't really know of other SMCs, other Black SMCs. So it would have been nice if I were coming, and what we're seeing in our space is that we have people who are coming like, oh, I'm going to try to conceive in a year or 2 years, or December 2022 is my timeline. So I would use that as a time to be like, can I get a job at Starbucks? Can I get a job at a part-time job at a company that has fertility benefits, and then go through the process then, and then be off and on my way? So I would be thinking strategically. Now, when I started trying to conceive, I did have an extra side job. So that did help to offset the cost just a little bit. So I'm not just talking out like, yeah, go get a second job. It's no big deal. It is something extra that you're doing outside of your work hours. So it will also take a toll and be exhausting. But if I had the single-minded focus of, I don't want to pay thousands of dollars to get pregnant, and this is an option, I might have found the energy to do that 3 to 4 months and then be done with it. When I was trying to conceive for my first, I don't think that I really looked into a lot of options. I knew that I wanted center-based care, but you have the different options are you could have family-based care, right? You got family members, you can incorporate your village and kind of get family to get on board with taking care of the baby. You could do home-based childcare. You could do center-based childcare. You can do an au pair. You could do a nanny. You could do any combination of those. I was never comfortable with the one-on-one dynamic of an adult with a child. And the only way that was going to happen was that if it was me with my child or another parent with my child. Since it's just me and I would be working, I knew that I would be doing center-based care. I was also more comfortable with a center because I did not want to have one point of failure. So if perhaps the nanny or the one person who was running that private daycare fell ill or something, I would be left having to scramble for childcare. And so I liked having multiple layers, multiple points of failure, like a pandemic would have had to happen in order for me to struggle and melt down over childcare, which did happen. And I did melt down. So I was not wrong on that part. So center-based care, it was for me. So one last thing on whether you use a center-based care or a home-based childcare. I know many states, Virginia does have a state licensing database where you can go and you can look up the center. But if you don't have that in your state, you can look up the center, see what their rating is, if they've been cited for any violations, if they are currently up to date on their licensing. But you can also use Yelp. I found retroactively some feedback about my previous daycare also on Yelp. They do Yelp reviews. So I would just say, do your due diligence, whatever you choose. If you go with an au pair, ask for references. If you go with a nanny, ask for references, care.com, do background checking and all of that stuff. And then the second thing, sometimes in the spaces, we will get people who make comments, and I don't think that they are fully clued into their words. They're like, oh, I don't want to put my child in daycare and have somebody else take care of my kid. Okay. Language does matter. And I think it matters and how we're triggered and how we're wired and what you end up struggling with because the mindset you went into it with. So in terms of how much time your kid spends in daycare, most daycares have a time limit and you're dropping off and you're picking up. And that is what, 5 days a week? That's 40 hours a week that your child is being socialized and is getting learning and enriching and interactive activity. The rest of the time, it's on you. And so I think as SMCs, we have to change the language in order to do what we need to do. And then to that, if you're confident and comfortable with your childcare situation, it's set it and forget it. And then you can go and focus on your work, which is one of the things that I love about my childcare situation. Blanket statement is that I feel that my kid is safe. My kid is having fun and an enjoyable time. And then I can go to work and I can focus my resources during my 8 to 5 workday on getting my work done. And then I transition into mamahood when I pick my kids up. But I think that language does matter, and the stories that we tell ourselves matter. Last thing I want to add to that is that not a lot of people have the skills to raise a tiny human from scratch. I think I was all over the place and in a good way, but I was really strategic. So when I tried for my first, I had bought my own home at that point. So I had 1200 square feet of space and I lived in Pennsylvania with friends and family close by. I had a nice SMC community. And then I was also traveling for work. And one of the places I traveled frequently was the DMV. And so once I knew that I was pregnant, I moved. And I kept moving. So I moved from my house to an apartment in the DMV area. And what I learned was that rent increases each year. Mm-hmm. And I was not comfortable with that increase, but it was what it was at the time. And so I tried for my first, I delivered, I was in the apartment and it was a fairly pricey apartment. And then I thought I would try for a second baby. And when I tried for the second baby, it was not two IUIs like it took to get my first. It was three IUIs. And at that point, I'm like, holy crap, I might have to really spend a lot more money here. And so at that time, my lease came up for renewal. So I moved to a cheaper apartment. So pretty much the moral of the story is I kept renting until I was done trying to conceive. And what happened was, the flexibility of renting allowed me to decrease my rental spending as my costs for trying to have a baby increase. And so I was able to keep it stable until I moved to this one apartment where it was pretty much rent stabilized, but I was renting from an owner and I worked a lease that was the same amount for almost 5 years. And so in that time, I didn't have rental fluctuations. I kept trying for my baby, but my rent and my housing stayed static. And that was tremendously helpful in not having my bills get out of whack, because at this point I was pulling money from everywhere that I can pull money from in order to complete my family. Everything else was fluctuating. I needed that flexibility. So I kept renting until my second turned two and I just bought a house. And so how much house do you need? I didn't have a house for most of my oldest daughter's life. So that's okay. We shared a room when I moved to DC. So again, you don't need a lot of space with an infant. And then I just moved into a 975 square foot house. It's a tiny house and there are more people. But I think having the flexibility of what you do with that space is going to be key. So how creative are you with how you utilize space? Yeah, that's what I had to do this time around. Now I have a considerable amount more that I'm paying in rent, right? Monthly mortgage rent, same bucket of money. And so I really had to look at what was decreasing. So I moved in July. My youngest turned two in June. So I knew I was going to get, what was that number? About $150 to $200 drop, which I would add to my mortgage. And then my oldest was coming out of school, right? School was ending in June. So whatever I was paying in before and aftercare would also now get added to this mortgage. And then I was going to get an increase at work. So it really was looking at the gas tank to seeing how it was going to fluctuate. And if this mortgage was, how this mortgage was going to impact my budget and my family finances. So it is something that you keep in mind. And last thing to say is that I know a lot of women who come to the space are really optimistic about trying to conceive. And they're like, yeah, I'm going to be that lucky person who gets pregnant on one IUI or one IVF cycle. I wish and I pray that it worked. The reality is that trying to conceive is one black box and you don't know how long it's going to take. So life, thinking about life on the other side of trying to conceive is really hard to do as you're going into it. So I would say factor that in. Hope for a short journey, but save for a long journey because anything that's left over goes to childcare. So you ever see those commercials where they're like, with the first baby, it's all bows and everything. Yeah. And the second baby looks like a cat that got dragged around.
Kids being held by their toe.
And when I think in terms of my finances, it's just that. So going into it with my first child, I was nervous. I was doing this thing and I was like, I'm going to do IUIs. And so when the first IUI didn't work, I was like, oh my gosh, am I going to pay for IVF? And so I was crying. I was running the numbers. And I was like, but at that point in time, I didn't know that I was fairly, I had always been a rainy day fund person. So I was always saving money. I was a haymon. So if I had free time and a job opportunity came by, whether it was contract work or teaching, I did that. So most of my trying to conceive for like the first 8 years leading into trying to conceive, I had a part-time job teaching. And so I kept that, and that really financed my first try. But it was funny that I was like, oh my gosh, I have to do another IUI. I might have to do IVF. But I got pregnant on the second IUI. And so we were good. That was when things were nice and neat and about. Mm-hmm. So then I was like, oh, my child turned one. I was like, I'm going to try for the second baby. And it's going to be, I got one IUI just and two IUIs. And I was just like, oh, wow, I might have to do IVF. So I was like, okay, I got this. So I looked at my budget and I was like, okay. And my process, I threw everything, including the kitchen sink, to find my child. Because they say in this SNC world, your child will find you. I gave my child a spotlight. I gave her a compass. I gave her a GPS unit. I gave her a catalog. I was like, come find me, baby. Eventually, I am here for all of it. Like, you show up when I tell you to show up, and I do. But I say that to say that I didn't know how much resources I had with the first baby, and the second baby took me all the way out. So I used savings, I used credit cards, and the way I handled my credit cards was because, like everybody else, I'm going to pay that off. I'm going to pay it off next year, within the year. That never happens. So if you're going into trying to conceive and you're going to get this baby and you're like, you have to really think in terms of my budget, all the bills I have now, because it's never going to get paid off next year because there will be a baby next year, right? Mm-hmm. And so on top of all the bills you have now, you have to add on childcare and then what you're spending to try to conceive if you're not independently wealthy and paying cash as you go. Mm-hmm. So I had all of this. So I was paying from savings. I had merit increases at work. I used 401k loans. I used credit cards. And now I am chipping away at paying off the debt with the spoon, with the baby and childcare and the mortgage, which means that I'm not taking any trips. So the pandemic, actually, I'm just like, here I am, pandemic, not going anywhere, wouldn't be going anywhere. I did it from like March until July, and it nearly broke me. And so, yeah, I did have the unexpected added expense of two in full-time daycare, which again, more debt. And I'm just looking at it like, yeah, can't really do anything about it now. Hopefully the pandemic will end next year. I'm a big proponent of hand-me-downs. One, because when kids reach a certain age, they are on their knees all the time. So I think from 1.5 until 5, I don't know what kids do with their knees, but it is like running over gravel every time. So the rest of the pants can look really good and the knees are rubbed out. So Noelle will rock denim shorts throughout the summer because all the knees are worn out and I cut above the knees and boom, she's got shorts for the summer. And then with the way toddlers eat, I watch the way my kid eats. And if I cried, if I spent money on every shirt that she's ruined or that school has ruined with paint or what have you, you look at school and you're just like, teachers, can y'all not do better than this? Like, how does she get paint? What is she? So, does she not wear a bib when she...
Full Pod, thank you so much for taking the time to listen. If you like what you've heard, please share this podcast with your girlfriends, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about the topics covered in this episode. So email me at mochasnc@gmail.com. If you found value in the topics covered, consider making a donation using the link in the show notes below. Till next time, Pod. Bye now.